on the past. Please listen carefully.
Go, go.
Welcome to the Coco Crew Podcast. A delicious adventure into the world of retro computing news and information. Featuring the Tandy Color Computer.
Hey, you got your Coco 3 yet?
Coco.
Ladies and gentlemen, Coco Cruisers and Maniacs, welcome to episode 85 of the Coco Crew Podcast. I'm John Linville, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Neil Blanchard. Hello, Neil.
Hello, John.
Mr. Mike Rowan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Coco Cruisers.
And, of course, the indomitable Mr. Boise Pete. Hello, Boise.
Coco forever.
All right, very good. Moving on to episode 85. We're now into our eighth year of producing this show. Still feels like a fun activity, so I guess we're still going to do it for a while longer. What do you think, Neil? Did you expect to be here at episode 85?
I have to say, it doesn't even seem it's been that long. That's what gets me.
Well, just a couple of U.S. presidencies, whatever.
I can't believe 2015.
Like I said, time marches on.
It was a whole different world then.
It really was. Different snapshot of the universe then. I'm pretty sure we've fallen into a different part of the multiverse. Hopefully the Marvel fans will understand that one. Pretty sure there's a Scarlet Witch involved. Anyway, so as time marches on, it's now basically the end of June. We're looking at another CocoFest coming up roughly in 10 months. I don't think they've decided for sure on a date yet. Sounds like they're having some trouble getting suitable bids for venues. So I think that's basically what they're targeting, but we'll see where it comes out. We do, however, have Tandy Assembly confirmed coming up. Well, in 3 months, I guess.
Coming up fast.
So, should be a cool event. Good chance for you to come and, of course, meet some of the hosts here and meet other, hopefully plenty of other Coco people, and there'll be plenty of other TRS-80 hobbyists. So, a good crowd. Get to experience a little Midwest Ohio town. Have a good time. All good time will be had by all.
It's going to be a blast.
Anyway. So what's everyone working on? Neil, what are you up to? You got the wood shop producing joysticks these days?
Yep. Yeah, wood shop is in full swing and also making some joystick adapters. For some reason, there's been a call for them, so that's great.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
That implies cool. People playing games. Yep. So that's good.
Good sign.
Boys, what have you been doing Coco-related these days? Anything recently?
Unfortunately, after the fest, I just got busy. I was busy with things, with work and other things. I have been watching with one eye on discussions on a Discord server for the Coco Nick Coco IO projects that are surrounding the various network card interfaces with the Coco. I think there's Mikey has been doing some great work in getting the WizNet chips working on the Coco. So I have not been participating, unfortunately, but I have been watching, and I think that is pretty promising. So I'm cheerleading him on.
Cool. Well, I'm sure your support is well received. Yep. So, yeah, Mikey has been doing some good work going after that project. He would probably be the backbone of the effort. Let's see. As of myself, what have I been doing? Well, I've been giving the evil eye to some of my haphazardly stacked piles. Maybe at some point I'll at least make them less haphazardly stacked, which might lead to a project.
Are they looking back at you?
Well, I haven't noticed any eyes or other signs of animal activity, but One never knows. Which is really a way of saying I hadn't done much of anything except ponder a couple of things where there's something uncovered enough that I can think about, hey, I could use that for something. I do see a Bell music box that had been my grandmother's before she passed. And I've been thinking that it would be fun to tear into that and hack the bells so that I could control them from a Coco, which would be similar to something I had in the past. But so you could play bell music with the Coco, that'd be fun.
Yeah, but that'd be cool.
That's mostly just me talking about something that might happen, so I don't want to take any credit for that. But we'll see. What about acquisitions? Anybody buy anything recently or anything up recently? I've kind of been ignoring eBay myself. It was a one of those 80s era cassette tape box things that looked kind of cool for storage, you know. But I couldn't bring myself to do it because it was, you know, it was like $75 or something. It's like, boy, that's a lot of money for something that I probably would have thrown away if I'd owned it back then. Anyway, so no big acquisitions for me either. Something's got to give there. I better start buying some stuff. Oh, well. Well, that'll have to do for an introduction. Lame as the eBay purchases may be. Anyway, why don't we call that an introduction, take a short break, and then we'll be back with some announcements.
You love the classic Motorola 6809. Its classic lines. Its DIP package. Its elegant instruction set. And the 6309 improved on the classic design. You've loved cruising the ROMs together for decades. But today, something new is arriving. The next generation of microprocessors implementing the Motorola 6809 instruction set. Introducing the Turbo 9 microprocessor IP. Ready for soft core IP, Verilog RTL, FPGAs, and custom ASICs. Three new models that speak the same 6809 language as their predecessors, but with modern features under the hood. Instruction pipelining, advanced RISC micro-op translation, and dual 16-bit ALUs. The Turbo 9 with the classic 16-bit internal data path and 8-bit data bus with two-cycle 16-bit transactions. The sporty Turbo 9S with a 16-bit data bus, one-cycle aligned 16-bit transactions, and two-cycle unaligned transactions. And the racing Turbo 9R with a 16-bit data bus and one-cycle 16-bit transactions. The Turbo 9 models are set to tear up the memory map, beating both AVR and RISC-V implementations in Drystone benchmark tests. Search YouTube for Turbo 9 Pipelined for details. Turbo 9, the classic Motorola 6809 instruction set reimagined.
All right, Coco Cruisers. Welcome back. Now it's time for some announcements. All right, you are listening to the Coco Crew Podcast. We are available on Twitter. With Twitter handle of at Coco Crew Podcast. That's @COCOCREWPODCAST. If you are prone to sending tweets, feel free to tweet at us, and we may or may not tweet back. We are, of course, also available on Facebook. We've got a Facebook group called The Coco Crew Podcast. That's, of course, four separate words. I won't spell it out for you, but I'm sure you can find us. We have an RSS feed available at CocoCrew.org if you're old school or DIY about things. But we're, of course, also available with listings through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, well, and a few other places if you're looking for us. And if you prefer to stream the podcast rather than download it, then we're available for streaming through Spotify, through Stitcher, and also TuneIn. For some time, we've been taking our audio podcast and doing a little mechanical conversion on it to produce a video that we upload to YouTube. So that all the episodes of the Coco Crew Podcast are available on YouTube. The advantage of consuming the podcast through YouTube is that YouTube does a pretty good job with subtitles. And so if you are either hearing impaired, or if perhaps English is not your first language, then sometimes it's a little easier to consume spoken English with subtitles to back you up. Then consuming the podcast or YouTube may make for a better experience for you. So if you do consume the podcast or YouTube, send us an email and let us know. I'd love to hear about it. Let's see. We are a member of the Throwback Network. This is a list of retro-themed podcasts to contain both technology-oriented podcasts and also other 80s culture-oriented podcasts with a variety of topics. You'll have to peruse the link in the show notes to find what's available there. If you're caught up with the Coco Crew podcast and looking for something else to listen to, then we recommend that you check out the Throwback Network. We're also listed on the Game by Game Podcast Information Hub. This is also a list of retro-themed podcasts, in this case all centered around technology and gaming, old computers, that sort of thing. So again, if you're caught up with the Coco Crew podcast and looking for something else to listen to, then we recommend that you check out the Game by Game Podcast Information Hub. Audio for the Coco Crew podcast is hosted by Cyber Ears. If you have a need to host audio on the internet, whether it be for your own podcast, social club, or mosque, or church, or other place of worship, we recommend that you check out Cyber Ears, where you will get your audio on your terms. If you want to reach out to the hosts of the Coco Crew podcast, we have a few email addresses set up available for you. The first three will reach all of the hosts of the Coco Crew podcast, but we've got show, S-H-O-W, at cococrew.org, that's C-O-C-O-C-R-E-W.org. But we've also got podcast, that's P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at cococrew.org, and feedback, F-E-E-D-B-A-C-K, at cococrew.org. And if you want to reach just one of the individual hosts, then I'm available as John, J-O-H-N, at cococrew.org. Neil's available as Neil, N-E-I-L, at cococrew.org. Mike, M-I-K-E, at cococrew.org. And Boise, B-O-I-S-Y, at cococrew.org. Feel free to reach out, and your email should get to us. All right. So at this point, we've got a list of some activities that we think might be of interest to you in the real world. July 15th through the 17th of 2022, Southernside Gaming Expo, be held in Atlanta, Georgia at the Marriott Renaissance Waverly. The Southernside Gaming Expo features more than 300 arcade and pinball machines, dozens of new and retro console systems, a massive tabletop library, RPGs, wrestling, music, tournaments, a vendor expo, exciting panel sessions, guest speakers, and so much more. Game all weekend at hashtag SFGE2022. Coming up July 19th through the 24th, 2022, we've got Kansas Fest. Kansas Fest, of course, is an Apple II event. It's the world's only annual convention dedicated to the Apple II computer. Held every year in Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas Fest invites hobbyists, retro computing enthusiasts, and diehard aficionados to gather from all corners of the world. Hackers, programmers, users, gamers, and curious observers come from Hawaii, Massachusetts, Florida, England, Australia, Japan, and many other places by plane, train, bicycle, and Vespa. If that sounds like your kind of event, then if you're interested in the Apple II, then we recommend that you check out Kansas Fest. July 23rd to the 24th of 2022, we have the Classic Games Fest, the biggest retro gaming event in Texas. It doesn't give a lot of information, but it does say it's the biggest retro gaming event in Texas. So, all right, well, I don't think we've had anybody go to this one yet. So if you go, give us some feedback, let us know how it went. All right, coming up August 6th and 7th of 2022, we have Vintage Computer Festival West. The VCF West is for everyone. Computer geeks, families, children, students, collectors, IT professionals, curious onlookers. This will be held at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. This should be a cool event. If you're looking for something to do and you're out on the West Coast of the United States, August 6th and 7th, 2022, we recommend that you check out VCF West. September 30th through October 2nd. That's the big event, Dandy Assembly. September 30th and October 2nd, 2022 in Springfield, Ohio. The exhibit registration is now open. If you'd like to exhibit attend the assembly, please see the exhibitors page. Call for speakers. If you have an interesting topic you would like to present or talk about and will become an attendee assembly, we would like to hear from you. See the speakers page for more details. Tandy Tech Track. We have to announce Tandy Assembly will again be offering the Tandy Tech Track, a collection of highly technical topics presented by some of the leading figures in the Tandy Radio Shack TRS-80 Vintage Computing community. We are actively seeking for Tech Track teachers. To see more details on the Tandy Tech Track page. Auction items. If you are planning to attend Tandy Assembly, please consider bringing and donating an item or two for the Saturday afternoon auction. All proceeds from the auction will go towards the cost of running this and future events. Attendees can now pre-register. Very cool event. Always been fun. Great location. Great group of people. Can't say enough about it. So make your plans. Come on out. We'd love to see you. October 14th through 16th, 2022, we have the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Heard nothing but good things about this event in the past. If you are in the northwest corner of the United States, and it is close to the middle of October 2022, definitely recommend that you check out the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Let us know how it goes. We're flipping around to next April. Tentatively scheduled April 22nd and 23rd of 2023, the 2023 edition of the last Chicago Cocoa Fest. They don't really have the page up yet, but it'll probably show up eventually. So, well, with that said, why don't we take a little break, another little break, and then we'll be back with some news.
Since 1994, Cloud9 has made cool stuff for your color computer. Now Cloud9 is proud to announce the 2 MB Triad Plus Memory Expansion Board. The Triad Plus works in two ways. Purchase just the Triad Plus board to expand your Color Computer 3 from 128K to 512K of RAM. Or add the new Protector Plus MMU to access the full 2 MB of static RAM aboard the Triad Plus. And the Protector Plus MMU utilizes full buffering to protect your CPU. Unlike previous 2 MB memory expansions for the Coco 3, the Triad Plus operates seamlessly without the need for special patches, configuration, or workarounds. Games like Donkey Kong Remix and Sierra Adventure games simply work without hassle. And the Triad Plus will reduce your Coco's power consumption and heat generation. The Triad Plus and Protector Plus MMU, only from the innovative engineering of Cloud9. Cool stuff for your color computer. Visit cloud9tech.com for details. Coco Tuner makes tuning musical instruments a breeze. Precise enough for concert piano tuning. Easy to use for music students and teachers. The Coco Tuner plugs into the cartridge slot of your color computer. Connect a microphone to the cartridge and you're ready to tune. A pitch comparison is displayed on your Coco screen. Bands indicate whether you are below or above the correct frequency. Accurate within 0.003 Hz of middle C, Coco Tuner can be used to tune any musical instrument. Coco Tuner, just $89 from Real Time Specialties Incorporated, Ypsilanti, Michigan.
All right, Coco Maniacs and Coco Cruisers, whatever kind of Coco you got. Now it's time for some news.
The first news item is, hello, some pictures of yesterday's Club Color Rio annual meeting by Mr. Daniel Campos. This is a Facebook post of a meeting of the, I believe this is the Brazilian folks, the Brazilian Coco guys in Rio de Janeiro. This was actually back in April. These photos were posted back in April, so I think this was even pre-Coco Fest. But it is always good to see, and especially good to see in this day and age with Facebook and other methods of communication, Coco groups from around the world getting together and sharing their, I guess for lack of a better word, a fest.
Yeah, very cool.
The next news item is Smash Up, a basic 10-liner game by a friend of the show, Mr. Jim Gary. This is a basic 10-liner game. I'm not too familiar with Smash Up. It's a YouTube video that Jim is exhibiting the game on.
Yeah, it's a car game. You're the green block that's a car, and you have to ram into the other cars, but you can't let them ram into you.
So it's kind of like a top-down view of the cars.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool game, especially for 10-liner.
Yeah, Jim continues to amaze, right, with these creations of his, right?
Month after month, man's a machine.
Man's a machine. The next news item is Stranger Things 2 and Basic and Color Basic. This is an article, a blog post by Alan Huffman of Sabetha Software. I haven't looked at this too closely. He's referencing the Stranger Things Netflix series, I guess. I see a link to a YouTube video of that. John, what do you know about this?
Well, I'm going to confess that I'm not watching Stranger Things. I did watch the first season of Stranger Things, and the last episode they had people throwing up slugs or something like that, and it was so gross that I just didn't want to watch anymore. So I guess I have a weak stomach. Anyway, but apparently in the Stranger Things season 2, there was some screenshot of code that was supposed to be basic code, perhaps running on some sort of Radio Shack computer, I guess. And there was a screenshot that's close up enough that... Well, close up enough that he could read it and transcribe it, but that it didn't look like familiar basic to him. You can see it's got some really long variable names and some like a parameter passing in parentheses and stuff. It looks a little strange. He's gone through the exercise of transcribing it and then maybe rewriting it so he can experiment with it. I don't know. Probably it represents an obsession, but I thought it was, if he took the time to write it up, it was worth reading. Maybe people will enjoy it.
The next news item is I've posted .bin versions of my three cartridge games, Flooded, Wampus, 3D Monster Maze, along with the source code to itch.io, and he gives the URL by Mr. Evan Wright. This is a Facebook post. Evan, of course, is a game writer. In fact, is the source code as well as the binaries, I believe, to his to this website. So very nice work, Evan. The next news item is a rather touching video that I enjoyed seeing on Facebook called Building Lego Prosthetic Arms. It's a Guinness World Records video, and it looks like a gentleman who, amazingly enough, who has a missing arm, is building a Lego prosthetics or prosthetics based on Legos for these little children with various missing appendages, arms or legs or whatever. It's actually really, it's a really touching video. I had to put a smile on my face watching it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's amazing. Maybe not that surprising that people could build something so articulated with Legos. One thing I find, though, is every time I build something with Legos, if I built, say, a hand or a claw, as soon as I used to, grasp something with it, the parts would pop off. So I don't know if these using extra strong parts or gluing them or what. Yeah. But pretty impressive nonetheless.
No doubt.
Yeah, very inventive.
The next news item is The Evolution of the Golden Age of Arcade Games, A History of Pushing the Limits by Garopoulos at YouTube. This is a 26-minute YouTube video where this person goes through looking at various arcade games and how they pushed the limits. I see Pole Position, one that I recognize. I see Robotron. There's Galaxian, a few others. Looks interesting. Battlezone. All games, of course, back in the day from the 80s, arcade games, but good content here.
Yeah, and I'm sure your mileage may vary some as far as the absolute truth or whatever's presented, but it's no different than going to Coca Fest and talking to people. Sometimes you get the tall stories that may be more true than others. You never know. Sort of a substitute for that, a slightly different topic since it's arcade games, more to inspire the discussion than anything else.
The next news item is Janelle's Rods, When Paint Sticks Do Math by Ryan Flowers at Hackaday. A Hackaday post talking about using paint sticks. For those of you who've gone to Lowe's and gotten those wooden paint sticks, he's created what's called Janelle's Rods. This is a method of doing multiplication that was invented by a French mathematician. I'm not exactly sure when, but he was a contemporary of Edouard Lucas, who was well known for calculating the largest or longest prime number by hand. So, interesting little video.
It's neat. It probably, you know, it's one of those, I think, that maybe it was last episode we had a session on kind of forgotten technology or whatever. Kind of belongs in that session if we had one here. But I always think it's neat when you can do some of these things with, you know, the yeah. strangest, who would think of using sticks and setting them to, I'm not exactly sure how this works, but basically setting down a row of sticks and using that to do multiplication. Kind of weird, yeah. but so sort of like a slide rule, but
yep,
kind of nifty.
Well, you know, the French can be rather creative.
No doubt.
The next news item is actually a combination of three from Sheldon McDonald, a prolific Coco programmer. First Coco test using the Sega mouse on Coco CAD in BASIC. And for those who have a PSG Sega mouse, MPI, here's a video, and Coco CAD using Sega mouse. It looks like a series of Facebook posts that Sheldon has made. I guess the highlight here is a BASIC program that does some CAD work. Is that right, on the Coco?
Well, so I'm not sure. I've never seen this before, so I'm not sure if the software is something that he has created or not.
That's an older program. I've used that before. That's been out there.
Yeah, it's the Sega mouse, which was, was used by actual Sega Genesis, where I'm not exactly sure what games or whatever, but it's got its own protocol. And, so he's plugged it up to the joystick ports that are available on the Coco PSG. Sheldon may be the only person using it for any of the joystick stuff, but he's making sure it works for everything he owns, it looks like. So, yeah. Very cool.
I have to say, that is one rare setup. I mean, the Coco PSG for one thing, and then the Sega mouse. I mean, there's not many of those kicking around.
Yeah, cool. I don't know if I've got one. Usually, that's the kind of thing, usually if I've ever stumbled across one, I would have go on the hunt on eBay to get one. I think I have the mouse for the Super Nintendo, but I don't think I have one for Sega. So
yeah, still cool. It's cool to see it in action.
Oh, for sure. All right, I'm next. It's from Rise Wood at Tech Radar. I bought a CRT TV for a retro gaming setup, and it was an existential nightmare. Now, I picked this one because this actually happened to me. Back when I got into the Coco, actually, I figured, I'll pick up a CRT for one of my Coco 1 setups. And I didn't realize the, as the guy mentions in this article, in his case, he picked up a CRT for a Sony PlayStation 1. But you need the remote for the TV, and not all of those TVs, universal remotes work with them. So if you have to switch the video inputs, it can be a challenge.
Yeah, starting with about 90 or so, they started making those TVs that, you had to have the remote to then be able to get into most of the configuration modes and stuff, or even to set the clock or set the antenna input or anything. There's, older TVs, you at least had extra buttons. And so if you didn't mind treasuring over to it, you could manipulate it. That is an issue. I don't know if it's CRT specific other than just that's how they were making them at that point. But
right. And the other thing that will get you is if you think you get lucky getting a universal remote working on it, only to find out just the basic functions work, like volume and power. But you still can't get the inputs going. So, I will say, though, and anybody listening to this podcast right now, don't give up. A CRT is still a nice way to go. All right. Next news article is from the Home Computer Museum. Totally unexpected. We received this Philips CDI 180 and 181 today. They are boxed. They look really nice. And you're probably wondering, why is this, you know, in the news section? Well, there's actually some relation to the Coco on this one, and I'm sure Boise could chime in on this one for Microware.
Yeah, I can. Obviously, the CDI machines run OS 9. And in fact, I think at the Coco Fest, somebody had a CDI machine set up with some CDI games. I saw it at a table. I'm trying to remember who had it. These things are getting, I think, kind of hard to find. The Philips models, especially what looks to be new in the box with these pictures. Wow, it even has the warranty cards and the remote. This is an older, definitely like one of the first CDI models, so it's very... I don't even know if this was actually sold retail or this was somehow a setup for developers, but maybe it was. But yeah, this is definitely one of the earlier models.
Yeah, for sure. It doesn't look like the common ones that you see.
Correct. Yeah, it's not the ones you saw later, like, you know, in the mid-90s that you'd buy at Sears or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's a good acquisition for the Home Computer Museum. I'm glad they got that.
That is really cool.
All right, next news article is from Joel Reese. I was persuaded by the question in the 6809 etc. group to start work on translation of the OFM article on the 63C09. Now, if I'm not mistaken, is that the article that when Hitachi released the specs for the processor that all of that information got out?
That is the article in 1988, I think, that someone in Japan wrote in Japanese. I don't know if Hitachi was involved in that or that was just discovered and then written about. But, yeah.
Okay. Right. So he's doing a translation on that article. That'll be cool.
All right, Frank. I finished checking the doors from the outside. You're all set for your shift. See you tomorrow.
Good night, Ted.
Being the night watchman can be a lonely job. But being the night watchman at a Radio Shack warehouse is an entirely different story. Frank can check out the newest realistic stereo receivers and Optimus speakers. Or the Concert Mate 600 polyphonic keyboard. And Frank gets to see all the latest Tandy color computers and accessories before you do. Like the new 128K Tandy Color Computer 3 with CM8 RGB analog color monitor. Frank's biggest challenge? Remembering when it's quitting time.
Already?
Radio Shack, America's technology store. Have you ever needed to keep a family budget, estimate interest on your savings account or other investments, predict inflation's effect on your money, or figure interest on a loan? Maybe you sat down with a calculator or pencil and paper in hand, but were discouraged by the amount of time involved or the complexity of the calculations. Spectaculator can make quick work of these and many other problems that come up every day. You just give Spectaculator the figures it needs to work with, tell it what to calculate, and in one step, Spectaculator displays the results you're looking for. Long columns of calculations that took hours to wade through by hand are handled by Spectaculator in a matter of seconds. You can instantly recalculate using new figures and new ways of producing results. Print your information on a line printer or save to disk for future use. Spectaculator requires a TRS-80 color computer equipped with extended BASIC, disk drive, and disk interface.
All right, next news article here is from Michael Klein. This is a disc of James Diffendaffer, Lorentz Attractor Program.
The Lorentz system is a system of differential equations, and it's named after meteorologist Edward Lorentz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of high math to be running on a Coco.
So it looks like his disc has been found. Michael Klein uploaded it to the local Facebook group here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
From Thomas Farley. Thomas asked the questions, did the label just fall off decades ago and a Radio Shack employee wearing an Avoid the Noid shirt just cobbled a label together to slap on it? So points to Thomas for making the reference to the Avoid the Noid. It's actually in the Tandy 1000 group, but pretty clearly a Coco cartridge. And I included this partly because we seem to see this question pop up, and it probably is the kind of thing that needs to be on a FAQ if we had one. But for those of you who aren't familiar with it or whatever, it's a pretty common looking, when you've been in the cocoa community long enough, you'll see some of these labels that are, they're not quite aftermarket. They're not the original colorful label produced by Tandy, but I suspect most of them come from the, they had the direct order warehouse, or I forget what they call it, special products or something like that. You could order through a catalog in the store.
Was it National Products? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, something like that.
You
know,
third-party software and things, yes.
But I suspect that a lot of them ended up with this. You know, maybe there was something more formal or some kind of memo that went out to the stores on how to produce labels. I'm not sure. But you see a lot of these, and they all look pretty much the same way. So a lot of people get them and think they've got something special. And it's not. It is not special at all. There's a whole bunch of labels out there like that. Like you said, at some point they probably lost their label, or it may have been so late in the production that somehow it never got the original label. I don't have the story on that. But this may look like a custom label or a special job or something, but they're pretty common.
And okay. Express Order, it was the Express Order software.
It was the Express Order.
That was in the later 80s, so this predates that. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, Express Order. That's where you could get third-party software and things for the cocoa.
Correct.
As well.
Yeah, this predates it though. I think unless they had old stock by the late 80s and still sold it with these. Because I actually remember buying something from Express Order, and it was like I think it was an OS9 manual or something. It was clearly photocopied. It was you could tell they had They didn't have any of the original stock anymore. They just basically sold what they could photocopy. They might have done this with the label or something like that, too. So
yeah, I ordered something like that. I think I was looking for a Robot Odyssey and wasn't really sure what the name of it was, and probably have told that story at some point. But anyway, I went to the local Radio Shack in Raleigh, looked through the catalog, and kind of pointed it to Robot Battle and ordered that. And it did come. It even had the colorful label or whatever. And that was about 1994. And, of course, the cocoa itself had been, even the Cocoa 3 was canceled in 90, I guess. So you could still get a few cocoa things even in the mid-90s from Radio Shack if you kind of knew how to do it. Anyway, moving on. Here's one from Andrew Ayers. A convert case program, convert uppercase to lowercase, lowercase to uppercase, and more. Comes from convertcase.net. I'm not sure what makes this program particularly interesting, although it is a reasonable computer science problem to work through. He's got a GitHub link from the Altair group that he took the Altair version and converted it to uppercase using an online conversion tool, and seems to work okay on the Cocoa 2. I don't know. It was basically Andrew doing a little exercise with the cocoa and sharing the results. And we love to see that. Keep people in the game. I don't know how useful it is to you, but you might want to check it out or at least take some inspiration from Andrew. And so when you do something with your cocoa, feel free to share. Always welcome to be seen. So thank you, Andrew. All right. Oh, yeah. So I'm sure many of you will remember. Well, Wordle took the podcast by storm a couple of months ago.
And, several months.
Yeah. And so Rick Adams is back here, says this is a Wordle game for the Cocoa 3. It was a big hit at the Cocoa Fest. Says a lot of people were playing the game and making suggestions. Found a bug, and sounds like he found a fix. So it's all available. He's got a GitHub link if you want Cocodle or Cocoli. Looks like the GitHub link is a little bit different than the actual name of the game. Anyway, yeah. If you're a Wordle addicted Cocoa person, you may want to check this out and get the latest version. Some of you may be aware of another show out in the Cocoa sphere. That has a lot of cocoa coverage. It's been around for a few months now. And that, of course, is the Taylor and Amy show, which features a couple of very enthusiastic women that working on the Coco and some other retro items. Interestingly enough, I believe both Taylor and Amy are perhaps different kinds of MDs, but MDs nonetheless. Don't know precisely their specialties. I think one of them is a psychiatrist. I'm not sure about the other. I'll let them represent their credentials on their own. But together they did attend the Coco Fest and seemed to enjoy themselves and had a lot of fun with some of the singing and whatever. They produced a vlog, or you know, video log of their Coco Fest travels, and have made it available on their YouTube channel. So if you're a fan of the Taylor and or Amy, or particularly the Taylor and Amy show together, then feel free to check it out. Very cool.
All right. Next news article here is from Angel's Workstation. It's a YouTube video, not really an article. It's an actual video here. It's a thrift store find, TRS-80 MC-10 unboxing. So if you wanted to see what it's like getting an MC-10 back in the day, you can get that by watching this video.
Even hooks it up to a television set, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing to see these unboxing videos. All right, the next news article is from Roger Taylor. It's a Facebook post in the Coco Facebook group titled, "So attendees of Coco Fest 2022 might have noticed a rather odd display." You could probably chime in more on this one, Boise, since you were there.
Yeah, you were there.
This was a glass case that had two gimme dies in it that Roger had put together. Interesting. It's a piece of history now, if you think about it, because of the work that was done to photograph the dies. It was, I didn't see it right away. Honestly, I had to look for it, but I did just kind of accidentally stumble upon it while I was walking the fest floor, and it was nicely done. There was a little plaque at the bottom indicating that it was, you know, what the gimme, that there were the two gimme dies for 86 and 87. Looks like there was a little bit of an issue. I think one was broken or something. I saw one had broken in half in the case itself, and I think Roger talks a little bit about that. But anyway, it was a nice piece of Coco, I guess, contemporary history, if you want to call it, recent history to show off at the fest. So, nice work.
All right, next news article up is from Michael Furman, Nitrous 9 Tools for the Coco I-O-N?
Yes.
Ethernet card. I don't know if that's how you pronounce that product. I know of the card.
Coco Ion.
Coco I-O. Yeah, I think the N is
it's a Coco term. I-O.
Okay.
So this is a card that Rick Ulin had. He was selling at the fest. I picked one up and had some discussions at the fest with Mikey and some other folks. I think it was Saturday night we were having that with Jeff and some others about the possible software side of what would it take to implement or add support for this hardware in OS9, Nitrous 9. And Mikey in you know, sure fashion kind of took it on himself and started working on it. I see he's got some screenshots and a GitHub repo. And, hey, more power to him. I wish I had time to help. I wanted to, and it's just too busy. But it's
cool
good to see
it,
the
see it pinging. Along. Yeah, he's got it talking.
Yeah.
I think he's got awesome.
A couple other utilities, NS Lookup. Yeah, it's basically, you know, the heavy lifting is done by the WizNet card on the Coco I.O., of course, but
right.
Still takes some effort to write software to interface and talk to that thing and get it working and get it bolted into the OS9 I.O. subsystem. So,
right.
Nice one.
Yeah,
that's great
nice
to see. All right, next news article is from Elias Michael. It's a YouTube video. It's a new series you can watch on Netflix. It's called High Score Netflix Series Official Trailer. So it's the trailer of this show. You can check it out.
Hmm. If, looks pretty interesting. Looks like our audience would enjoy this series a lot.
For sure.
All right, our next link is from Vintage Geek at YouTube. It's the TDP System 100, the color computer's cousin.
This is a pretty cool video. It's about 20 minutes long, and it just goes kind of through the history of TDP, which was Tandy Data Products, who also released the Color Computer with some interesting cases and variations. And even though it was the same product, basically, they still produced disk drives, cartridges, and things that were also marked with TDP. So it makes them kind of unique if you're a collector. There are people that collect TDP stuff, and it's a good little video about it. So if you're not familiar with TDP or are interested in it, you should definitely check this out. Did you guys watch this video? It's pretty good.
And it looks like he's actually taken the Cocoa 3 keyboard and put it in one, a TDP 100, if I'm seeing this right, around the 8-minute mark.
That's probably
true. Yeah, it's a pretty cool video.
Mm-hmm. All right, this next one is have some mixed news. This is from John Whitworth. I was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which that is not good news at all, of course. If you're not familiar with John Whitworth, he's the producer of the Dragon Plus board kits. John produced the Super Sprite boards, producing products for the Dragon and the Coco. He was hospitalized and learned that he had leukemia. Sounds like he's doing fairly well on chemo. He originally was just going to shut down Dragon Plus Electronics, but he's kind of rallied a little bit. So he's not going to be selling new items or building them, but he is going to still apparently offer kits. Stay posted to see what's available. But, of course, we wish John and his family the best.
Yep.
You can follow this link on Facebook and reach out to him. Of course, everybody is sending him well wishes. So,
life gets in the way sometimes. We wish him the best and hope he can recover and come back and do some great work.
All right. Our next story is from Bill Pierce. It is the new VCC release. It's release 2106 beta. Support for the Hi-Res and Cocoa Max interfaces, and also the ability to hide the Windows mouse pointer while in VCC work area. If you're a VCC user, you'll want to probably check this out, there are a couple, it is a beta. I do see a posting that there's some color issues in Cocoa Max 3 specifically that have been discovered. So there'll be some tweaking, I'm sure. There usually is with these releases. This seems to be a favorite of people that use Windows. So if you're a VCC user, then be sure to check it out. Thanks for the link, Bill. And we've got another one from Richard Kelly. We seem to hear more and more from Richard on a regular basis, which is pretty cool. It's a game called Heist, and it's a cute little write-up here in kind of the mob style, gangster style of maybe the 20s or 30s. But Heist is basically a game where an earthquake has happened, and it has opened up the vault in a bank. And your job is to go in there and get the cash, but there's all kinds of obstacles. It's dangerous because there's cops around. There's all kinds of hazards because of the earthquake. Pretty cool looking game. Nice write up. You can grab this from Color Computer Archive, and we've got the link here into Facebook where you can read about it and see a screenshot of it. So, very cool. And thanks once again from Richard Kelly. Keeps cranking them out.
Soon to be another Jim Gehring.
Very, very true.
Joysticks, your fingers would ache for days.
Put the past behind you. Introducing the Gamester. The Gamester is the ultimate two-button joystick controller for your Color Computer, Dragon, and Tandy 1000. The Gamester features a genuine arcade-quality joystick with two large arcade-quality Cherry Switch buttons on a single surface. Best of all, the hardware is mounted in a sturdy wooden cabinet. It sits comfortably on your lap or on your desk. Experience the difference that super high-quality, heavy-duty components make in your gameplay. No more finger fatigue. Responsive button switches. Sturdy components that can take the punishment of even the most enthusiastic player. Every Gamester is built to order. Choose the wood for your cabinet. Choose custom paint or stain and finishes. Select the cable length for your Gamester. Choose a left-handed configuration. Or add adapters for your Dragon computer. The Gamester is designed to last a lifetime. To build yours, simply reach out to Neil Blanchard by email. neil@cococrew.org. That's NEIL@COCOCREW.org. Experience genuine arcade controller action for all of your favorite Color Computer, Dragon, and Tandy 1000 computer games. For true arcade action, it's The Gamester.
If you're a fan of the TRS-80 color computer, then you won't want to miss Coco, the colorful history of Tandy's underdog computer, from CRC Press. Follow the evolution of the color computer from the early beginnings of Project Green Thumb and Videotex terminals to the Coco 1, MC10, Coco 2, and Coco 3. Follow the rise of Rainbow Magazine, Microware, and the Coco community at large. Get the inside story from Tandy engineers, constantly challenged to reduce cost and increase capability. If you own a Coco, you should own this book. Coco, the colorful history of Tandy's underdog computer. Written by Boise Pete and Bill LaJudas. Available now at Amazon.com.
Okay, so now we have a link, a news item from Fabrizio Caruso. Fabrizio, if you recall, has got a mission of sorts promoting what he calls CrossLib, which is a software package supporting development of cross-platform programs for a variety of retro computers. He has a link here, says, hi everyone. I've recently added support for the four-color mode of the Coco 102 and Dragon 3264 to my universal framework, CrossLib. And then he's got a URL to his CrossLib on GitHub. You know, he pops up, I guess, here at the link. He's got a couple of other links where you can download some examples, including X-Horde or Cross-Horde. He's got a number of games available. Some of them are pretty good. At least some of them are pretty good. it's pretty amazing that they work at all, considering the nature of the programs. They're always producing programs run across multiple vintage hardware platforms. So if that interests you, check it out, or at least check out what he's developed already and see if you like his games. I'm sure Fabrizio would love the testing and of course, the fame and notoriety that will come from more people being exposed to his work.
Looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. We've got a piece on Ars Technica from author Kyle Orland. And he says, physical console games are quickly becoming a relatively niche market. Actually didn't dig into the gist of his theory here. I suspect he's hinting at the damage to physical media and that sort of thing, and the widespread use of emulation, you know, the conveniences there offered thereby. So mostly included is a thought piece here for anyone who wants to check it out. Tell us what you think. If you think he's all wet, or if you think he's got a good view on things. I don't know. I like the physical collection of old console stuff. Probably too much. Certainly takes up some space in my bunker. But, you know, maybe you do, maybe you disagree. What do you think, Neil? Do you like the physical games?
Definitely.
Yeah. Do you think it's a concern that they may all be dying?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. These things seem to last the test of time. I'm not too worried.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ask, you know, in 1,000 years or 100 years, maybe even 20 years, who knows? It may be impossible to find this stuff, but I do suspect that the amount available versus the amount of people who actually care will probably remain relatively constant. And there may be a few kind of out of whack things, whether it be somebody who's willing to pay $5,000 for a copy of something if you got the right thing, but I suspect the number of people that want to do that is already pretty low. And so they'll continue to disappear at a similar rate to that of the media disappearing. All right, moving on. We got an announcement from Absinthe BBS. Let's share a link to the VBSing 3.0 group on Facebook. I'm not sure if everyone will be able to see this, but if it asks you to join the group and you want to see this link, well, you'll have to join the group. Anyway, it says, check out the first episode of Text Mode Underground, now available on ArachnetTV.
a podcast by Anachronous and Smooth covering the BBS and underground scene. The episode focuses on creating and running a unique active board as well as current and upcoming events in our community. So it's another podcast, and in this case, the one relating to BBSing. So what do you think? Do you think that's interesting to the listeners here? I would think probably, so I included it, but I don't know. What do you think, Neil? What do you think, Mike?
There's quite a few cocoers that use their cocos to, telnet to BBSs now. I have some on my board. They use their Coco 3.
Yeah, I still do that with my Wi-Fi modem, sure.
Yeah, so I figure there's some appetite for that. So, very cool. Anyway, okay. Check out their podcast. Let us know if you like them, and let us know if you want us to cover more, that sort of thing. You know, that's what the feedback email is for.
I tell you, I just learned something.
What's that?
I got to join the BBSing 3.0 group. I'm only in the 2.0 group. I just noticed.
Well, I'm going to add that I don't do telnetting on my Coco. I'm purist, so I just use 300 baud modems.
Oh, right on.
Oh, Lord. Well, that's all right. If you do use something other than a 300 baud modem, you're still okay. But, you know, we have to say that for some people. All right. So moving on, we got a game announcement from Paul Shoemaker, which at first I thought, oh, good, another card game. But not in this case.
Yeah.
So Paul's got something kind of unique, which I guess it's maybe not entirely unique since it's a small side project I'm working on based on a simple phone game called Pack Rush that I have not looked at. So I don't know if Pack Rush shares this back and forth around the circle theme that his game that is now called Ghost Rush. I don't know if it's similar in that respect or not, but I would assume it probably is. Anyway, I think this is one of those where you may want to look twice. I think the initial look at this game may underwhelm you. It kind of underwhelmed me, but then I expressed that to a couple of people and they looked at me like my head was on sideways. So I suspect that you should give it a try and play it. You might enjoy it. It is, for number one, I will say just from a visual appeal, he's using the P-Mode 1 colors, and I've probably never seen anything look better in P-Mode 1 colors. Maybe it just is somewhat suitable for the graphics that he's using, but it certainly makes the most of them. Anyway, it takes the ghost from Pac-Man, and who becomes the protagonist of this group, and then puts him on a circle track. And you proceed to move back and forth around the circle track, trying to pick up a few pellets. I think it's supposed to be like power pills. Meanwhile, there are a few random things that fall down, the spiky-looking things. I'm not sure what he calls them.
They look like computer chips.
Yeah, but you don't want to get hit by them. So it's a game, and it's arcade action-ish, certainly a reaction to what's on the screen, and maybe a certain amount of strategy involved if you can figure out how things are timed and where things are placed and that sort of stuff. It may not look very exciting at the very beginning, but give it a second look, I think, because everyone seems to enjoy it, and everyone seems to like the game so far.
I think your head's on sideways. I thought it was an interesting game from the get-go. Like you said, it's really good looking. It's just different kind of gameplay than you're used to. That's maybe why you don't look at it or deserves a second look.
Like I said, it doesn't look like anything else that I've seen, at least.
That's true. It's very unique and surprisingly challenging. It's pretty cool.
So there you have it. An alternative opinion without me even really giving an opinion. But maybe me giving it a little bit of a sideways look, someone else who's ready to defend it. So it must be a pretty good game. So give it a try.
Paul's game, good.
Yeah, there you go. Very good, very good. Well, I'll shut up now.
All right, our next one is from Nolan Lawson. It's the collapse of complex software. It's kind of an interesting little article. Basically, it's comparing complex software systems to ancient civilizations, such as, you know, that have fallen in the past, like Rome and the Chicauan Empire, that kind of thing. Yeah, this is definitely worth a read. The challenges that complicated software environments offer. So just a little bit of software archaeology, if you will, if you're into that, definitely give this a read.
Yeah. Well, as someone who's been in the industry for a while, I will say that generally speaking, the easier it is to understand how the software works, then the more likely you are able to keep it working. And so that leans in favor of less complex software and interactions or whatever. On the other hand, quite often more useful software also leads to more complicated software. And some people seem to excel at adding complexity to software. May or may not have been accused of being one of those people in the past. So it kind of goes both ways. But this has a certain appeal to me that if you can reduce complexity, you can probably increase lifespan, both for human societies and for programs. But your mileage may vary.
This next one is from Sensible Person at YouTube. No refunds for Intellivision Amico suckers. So a little harsh, but deserved, I think, when you watch the video. So the newly formed Intellivision Amico is taking people's money for products that they haven't created yet and have assured people that they could get refunds at any time for their investment, only to find that, no, in fact, you can't get refunds because they've spent all the money. Mm. And this is a story we run into in the retro community almost on a daily basis. We've got problems right here in the Cocoa community for people that promise services and don't deliver, take your boards and then you never see them again. Thankfully, it's rare, but it does happen, and you should be aware of that in the community. Sometimes you make purchases from people and they ghost you. Again, it's the exception, not the rule, but this is just another example of the sad thing that does happen in different communities from time to time, and the Cocoa community is no exception.
Yeah, definitely a caveat emptor to some degree, which doesn't justify it, but it does happen, and it's probably best to be prepared, or at least to never send away cash that you can't afford to lose.
Exactly. All right, our next 1, 2, 3, 4 links are from Per Surratt. More AGD converted games. We got Pack 54 with mini sprites, Pack 55, 56, and 57. I am just stunned that Per just keeps cranking these out, and we're up to Pack 57. No excuse to, you know, there's tons and tons and tons of games and programs out here. So that's really cool, and glad to see that we've got more being generated this month. So thank you, Per.
It's amazing, and like I said, they don't stop. It's still keeping it coming. And like I say, if you looked at, there's a new feature in this arcade game designer software that some people are using called mini sprites. I don't know a lot about it, but apparently you need the updated platform to be able to use them. Somebody's using them. Must be a cool feature. So give it a try and expand your gaming library.
Our final story is from Angela Coelho. Finally, I'm licensed to drive my Apple II. And this is from the Apple II Enthusiasts Facebook page. But basically, he's come up with kind of like a driver's license or credit card, a photo ID, this one for the Apple II Club. So he's got a little QR code on it and membership identification.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's silly, you know, but it's kind of a goofy thing that kind of, you know, we're all part of the club. We can all have our membership card. Kind of, you know, like I said, it's kitschy and silly, but it's kind of camaraderie building thing. Yeah, so it'd be kind of cool if somebody offered these.
that probably does it for our news section. Like I said, we'll take a little short break for some interstitial entertainment, and we'll be back with some feedback, a little discussion on the feedback.
This is the Cocoa Crew Podcast Network.
This is it, gang. The greatest Radio Shack value ever offered. The new TRS-80 color computer, featuring 4K to 16K of memory, 53-key keyboard, 16 lines of 32 uppercase characters, connectors for two two-dimensional joysticks with push-button switch on each, RS-232 serial I.O. port, 1500 baud cassette port. To get yours, buy a box of Gimme Crisp cereal, then, with your name and address, send $400 in coin at a Gimme Crisp box top to Color Computer, Box 812, St. Louis, Missouri. If you don't agree that the TRS-80 color computer is tops, return it. We'll return your money. That's Color Computer, Box 812, St. Louis, Missouri.
Your Tandy color computer is powerful, but it's plagued with one problem.
Clunky expansion.
Bowtech Instruments has the solution. Quality hardwood cabinets for your color computer. Eliminate that mess on your desk by transferring your computer components into a single elegant case. Our beautiful wood cases have room for your color computer motherboard, disk controller, two half-height floppy disk drives, and an additional 5x7 board, such as an 80-column card. Each case is precision milled in our factory and includes a high-quality switching power supply for all of your color computer components. Each case includes a matching hardwood keyboard enclosure for your color computer keyboard. Stop fighting the mess of cables and adapters that take up all of your desk space. Make your system shine with a new hardwood case from Bowtech Instruments. Cases are available in your choice of hardwoods: oak, maple, cherry, walnut, and teak. Another quality computer product from Bowtech Instruments, Utica, Michigan, USA.
All right, welcome back. Now it's time to talk about some feedback. We've got a couple of feedback items this month. Both are in relation to our discussion from last month. Not surprising, I guess. But I can't help but feel like both items sort of, well, kind of missed what we intended with the discussion. At least it missed what I intended. So the discussion last month, is it wrong to be a cocoa purist? That was the discussion title last month, which I thought was fairly clearly inspired by the feeling that the term purist was kind of being thrown around in the community as a sort of an attack by itself, basically saying, oh, whatever I say is cocoa, and if you disagree, well, you're just being a purist and you don't matter. And so I felt like we were standing up or saying, maybe being a purist, whether or not I'm being a purist, I still matter. You know, I don't have to like your thing just because you call it cocoa. You know, so it's sort of in defense of purist reasoning, but I don't feel like that's the way the people who sent feedback reacted to the discussion. Let's talk first about feedback from L. Curtis Boyle. Pretty well-known person in the community, pretty level-headed and friendly and nice, and he's Canadian, you know, so that's the way they are. Curtis was kind of, I mean, it's hard to summarize these things in one sentence or whatever, but he was kind of taking the tack of, well, different people like different things, and some people don't want to be purists. So he says, others have no limits on what you add, because that was what a lot of hardware designers tried doing back then anyways, parentheses, like adding hard drives, MIDI cards, serial mice, etc. It's just much easier and more powerful these days because technology has advanced, but we were doing that back then too. And so I read that as Curtis saying, we don't have to be purists. Not everybody wants to be a purist, and not everybody was a purist back in the day either. And all that's certainly true, right? But I think he kind of misses the point. And basically we were saying, we feel like some people are saying, well, you're just a purist, so you wouldn't understand. or you don't like this or that because you're just a purist, so what you think doesn't matter. That's where I was coming from. Mike and Neil were both with me on the discussion. I'll have to give them a chance to represent themselves on this one. How did you guys see the discussion?
Yeah, I see it as the same way. It was pretty much a yes no kind of a question. It was about being a cocoa purist. It wasn't saying that not being a cocoa purist is bad.
Right. So I mean, we did say that we kind of tended as a group to be purists, or maybe more towards that direction, and maybe that's subject to some interpretation. But I certainly did not intend to say, and you know, the only way you can be is a purist, because that certainly would be a terrible road to go down. Because imagine the Karens all lining up to call you. You put an aftermarket keyboard on your Coco. You're not a purist, you know, something like that. I don't think that's anybody was going that direction.
No.
Yeah, no, it almost has the stigma of saying you were a Coco white nationalist or something. It's not that.
Right.
Yeah.
And
if you want to put a Vortec in your Model T, go for it.
Well, there you go. But right. So if you do put a Vortec in your Model T, and then a bunch of old guys don't come and look at your car at the car show, don't go around saying, well, you guys are just a bunch of purists. I mean, I guess exactly. You can do that if you want to, but it's sort of what we're saying is if we want to like the Model Ts because of what the Model Ts came in, brought with them, that's okay too. So, which kind of baffles me when we come to the next bit of feedback we got from Fred D. Provancha. I think that's how it looks to me to be pronounced. It might be Provancha. I think probably Fred recognizes that I'm trying to say his name. So Fred says, I want to hear you guys say it. Is it also just as okay in your minds to not be a purist? And that kind of baffles me to even get that question. And so I responded to Fred. I think I've got the email here. So I said, well, inspired by his email, I listened again to the podcast or to the segment in question, suggested that maybe he should as well. And then I wondered if he was expecting an attack that I don't think was there. If somehow by laying it out as about being a purist or defending purists, if that somehow triggered him to think that we were purist only, or, you know, purist nationalist, or or whatever the thing is. So again, I don't really see a need to say, yes, you can be a non-purist, because the whole point of them saying, you know, don't attack people for being purists, that kind of assumes that you can be a non-purist, I think. He goes on to kind of write a defense of how he doesn't consider himself a purist. Says the cocoa has to evolve, the communities to grow, and remain active, whatever. I think that's, I said there's a fine but unnecessary defense of your own views of the hobby. I neither fully agree nor disagree with what you've written. I have no doubt that any stance could be taken too far. Like I said, you could have some Karen haranguing you for replacing keyboard keys or or using a non-Tandy cable or something like that. Certainly not what I would not carry. I would not claim to be a purist to that level, for sure. Anyway, I finish with, luckily, none of us have any power over anyone else in their practice or enjoyment of the hobby. So that's probably the statement that I would like for people to carry away. If you think that someone is trying to tell you what to do or whatever, which seems to have been a problem in the past with some other issues, to somehow by offering this this venue of entertainment where we also include our own opinions, somehow some people take offense at the offering of opinions as if we're trying to force other people to live by our opinions, and of course we're not. And we have no power to do so even if we were. So, anyway, hopefully, Fred, you understand what we're saying now, and certainly not trying to force
any kind of cocoa puritanism or purism or whatever the term is. We're certainly not trying to force you to only like stock cocos. You can have your Cocoa 2 with a 6309 in it, or modified keyboards, entire replacements like the Gimme X for whatever kind of new system that turns into. You can have all that if you want to. Just don't attack those of us who like things a little more stock. Okay, hopefully that settles that. So I'm going to call the feedback section on this one to an end. Happy cocoing. Remember, we're all here for the cocoa, and however you want to enjoy it, I guess that's up to you. All right, well, we'll take another little break, and then we'll be back to cause some more trouble with another discussion.
The Dragon is back with 64K.
Halo, Halo, Dragon's back.
The serial port in the case is gray.
Halo, Halo, Dragon's back.
ROMs for two kinds of basic. New ways for you to be creative. Fully compatible with the Dragon 32.
Dragon Data Limited is proud to present the new Dragon 64. It has twice the memory of the Dragon 32, featuring a real serial communications port.
Get your Dragon 64 today.
Halo, Halo, Dragon's back.
Dragon Data Limited.
Add realism to your color computer's flight simulator programs. Fly the Cocoa 150. A real wheel and throttle, just like a real airplane. Just $49.95. Or buy the combo. Tom Mix Worlds of Flight and the Cocoa 150, just $72.95. Try ASI AFR Flight Simulator, the most valid home computer instrument flight simulator, for just $15.95. Or buy the everything package, the Cocoa 150, Tom Mix Worlds of Flight, and the ASI AFR Flight Simulator, all for just $82.95. Get your Cocoa off the ground today with the Cocoa 150. From Alvin Scientific, Daytona Beach, Florida.
All right, Cocoa Cruisers and Cocoa Maniacs, welcome back to the main event, our host discussion. I'd like to think we're going to turn things down a little bit for be calm a little bit. I'm not sure we're going to get that. So we picked a topic, and we're ready to stir things up a little bit, maybe. Ironically, because it's actually in the subject of that we're going to discuss. So the topic is phrased thusly: why do these discussions get people so stirred up? So I'll vamp a little bit, as I usually do, while people formulate their positions. So I guess. Yeah, a lot of people aren't used to hearing other people offer true opinions these days for a variety of reasons. Certainly, political correctness has discouraged a lot of people in day-to-day lives from offering opinions, or at least opinions other than whatever's the approved of the topic of the day, supporting Ukraine or whatever. I suspect when you have kind of a silly hobby, there's some people who maybe sometimes have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder about their hobby, and they don't want to be challenged on how they practice it. And I don't want to be challenged on how I practice the hobby either, so I understand. But sometimes you need you need to let go, and you need to not give a thought, shall we say, to how other people react to your hobby. But when somebody hears something that kind of goes against the way they would practice a hobby, or maybe they feel it's somehow a direct affront to how they're spending their free time, it's I guess you can understand why people would get a little frustrated or rustled up on that. The cost of sending an email is actually pretty cheap. And once you can type the address or whatever, that's about all it takes. And so you can see where sometimes people would get a little worked up and then fire off an angry email. It makes them feel better. Certainly could not say that I've never done that. I suspect also because of what I just said, we may have to also filter out that not every
hot, angry, steaming howler of an email that we receive actually represents a hot, angry person at the other end, or at least some, maybe they were hot and angry when they wrote it, but they probably aren't still hot and angry by the time we get it. I don't know. So I've probably vamped long enough. Hopefully one of my co-hosts has come up with something to say to add to the discussion. So who's next? Boise?
Yeah, I'll say this. I think this goes way back, even before podcasting, if we all remember the rainbow, right? And print mm-hmm. pound minus two in Lonnie's column. It was kind of Lonnie's soapbox, right? It was his opinion piece. And some months he was, writing about something mundane. Other months he was, kind of delving into more controversial topics, providing his thoughts and opinions. He would get feedback, and sometimes he would reveal that feedback in his column. But I'm sure he got a lot of people upset, too. There were specific things I remember about Print Pound Minus 2, one of them being whenever he recommended no one buy the MM1 or the TC70 machines from the late 90 or late 1991 era and stick with the Coco 3 as a path forward, or saying there basically was never going to be a Coco 4, which I kind of agree on him, of course, with that. But I guess my point is people, anytime you put forth an opinion or a position, someone's going to disagree with it. And that's par for the course. Sure. It happened then, it happens now. I mean, I consider ourselves the liquid audio version of Rainbow Magazine every month. And this is our Print Pound Minus 2, except there's four of us talking about it.
Right.
Or I can't speak to why people get upset. I think it's just a matter of, hey, we have an opinion, we put it out there, but it's nothing new. I think it's probably more visible in the instantaneous communication world we live in today versus 30 years ago when Rainbow Magazine was in print, but I think it's just par for the course.
No doubt, no doubt. Sometimes we get some emails that, I read through them at first and say, oh my Lord, who was this person listening to? What are they thinking? Whatever. And sometimes I read them again and again and still end up thinking that. but quite often, it's just like, well, we touched a nerve and you can kind of see where someone kind of blew up a little bit. But it can be helpful to know. It's like, well, we weren't careful enough when we were talking about that topic and kind of made some blanket statements, or maybe went a little too far, or maybe we weren't careful enough with the consideration for, say, the Glenside Volunteers or somebody like that. So it keeps us in check a little bit. That's fine. We all need to have our boundaries enforced somehow. And, it's a sign of healthiness, I think. If the community will talk to us and tell us when they think we were wrong, it's nice if you talk to us when you think we're right, too. But sometimes it takes being wrong to get the response, I guess. It's a sign of healthiness in the community when we talk back and forth and get some of that. And, as someone who likes to see the numbers on our downloads, I don't always feel so bad being controversial. It's no such thing as bad publicity, is the old saying. We're usually not intentionally trying to provoke anyone, but maybe it's okay if we do provoke some people now and then. What do you think, Neil? You're obviously the most provocative and angry person on the panel.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Well, I mean, to add to that, I agree with what you guys are saying. I think adding to that, some people are, they like controversy,
Sure.
And being behind a screen, what do they call it, keyboard warriors. It's just an old-fashioned dust-up. It's a distraction from, your everyday lives. And, not necessarily, it's a bad thing. I mean, it might annoy somebody, but I think, some people enjoy that. It's...
Right. Well, like you said, the keyboard warrior phenomenon or whatever, a lot of people think it started with Facebook. Some people maybe think it started way before Facebook, you know, with like AOL.
Usenet.
Or something like that. Many of us realize, of course, it started at least in the BBS days, if not even before that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's traditional, kind of goes along with being a geek, but mostly because it was geeky people that had email. And so if we're honest with ourselves, we'll probably have a pretty big geek percentage in our audience. Don't you think?
Just a little bit, so, yeah.
And so maybe it's not a surprise that we get some of that keyboard warrior, sometimes it's more like keyboard kamikaze, coming across at us in the feedback. But again, it's welcome. And, you know, if you need to vent or whatever, if we say something that irritates you enough that you have to vent, well, go ahead and do it. And for that matter, if you want to send us something and then say, I needed to vent, but don't publish this, well, we won't publish it, I promise. Either way, it's good to have your feedback and know what you think about the things we say. Sometimes it's good just to know that somebody's out there listening.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So, I don't think we heard from you, Mike.
I think part of it is conditioning by media in general, because controversy sells.
Right.
Sells airtime, and everything is painted as two opposing views, when the reality is there's all kinds of layers of gray between, you know, between the two extremes, right? But we don't hear about that because it's got to fit into, you know, 5 minutes of banter on a TV show. You know, we've all been in our cars listening to talk radio at some point and yelling and screaming at the radio for something that we, you know, disagreed with, right? And that's generally how you would handle it. And radio has become more of an anachronism in that style. We're kind of like that, I guess. And I think sometimes people want, you know, it's a monthly show. It's a monthly free show. And people want you to jump through hoops and start big, long dialogues and having a discussion when it's just, like you said, it's just our opinion. If you point out that we're wrong, and we agree that we're wrong, you know, we're open to getting more information and more data and things, but, you know, it's not something we're going to beat on for month after month, right? As a monthly show. So it's kind of containerized. We can have some back and forth, but I mean, we get a lot of good feedback as well. And I mean, it can be negative feedback, or I should say not negative feedback, but feedback that disagrees with our point of view, but interchange about opposing views seems to be a lost art in our society.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it's enjoyable when you have an intellectual discussion with someone with an opposing view who was just wants, there's not a lot of fun in talking to people that agree with you all the time.
Absolutely.
But there's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it, and we often get the wrong way. You know, and then there's people that don't give us feedback at all. There's people in the community that, you know, mock us on Discord and, you know, the usual suspects, right?
But right.
And that's fine. That's out there. Who cares in the end? But this is just a hobby. It's just a show where we, you know, we do an opinion that's not really going to change the world. And really, does it really affect the hobby that much at the end of the day? Probably not.
Well, I mean, I like to think we're influential. Maybe we are, maybe we're not. But I mean, that is a big point is, you know, if we came out and if I went in the backyard and found some rocks and carved some rules in them and then brought them to Cocoa Fest, you don't have to follow what they say. In fact, if I tried to bring them to Cocoa Fest, I'd probably drop them in the parking lot and well, anyway, that's a reference to another movie, but you know, we're not in charge. We tell it like it is, how we see it. We're having fun and we enjoy ourselves, and we think we're doing it good. If you disagree, then you know, do it your own way. You know, we'll see who has the most fun in the long term. There, no doubt I've just challenged somebody and made them angry with that.
I would add that when people decide to send us feedback, email feedback, at the end of the email, put something like, we love you, you're very special. Makes us feel good, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, have we shaken this one to a coma or beat it to death or whatever? All right, well, that's the most you're going to get from us for now, so we'll just have to end this discussion and get back to whatever's left of the show, and I hope you enjoy it. We'll probably be back next month talking about something else. Go forever.
So what did you want to show me?
Check this out. I do this poke, and the printer is now at 9600.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
And I wrote this little program to do all these pokes to give me access to 40-track drives.
Yeah?
And this one lets me access both sides of the drive.
Okay.
And this utility automatically creates line numbers for me in BASIC.
You do know that all of these things are built into ADOS, don't you?
Huh?
Have you been living in a cave somewhere? ADOS adds all sorts of cool functions to your color computer, all the things you described and more. It even supports true lowercase on the new Coco 2s.
You're kidding me.
ADOS adds things like repeat key so you can edit your last command, DOS command for OS 9, error trapping in BASIC, there's a RAM command to run in full RAM mode, two COM disk directories, keyword abbreviation, and that doesn't even scratch the surface of the features of ADOS.
That sounds easier than all these pokes and short utility programs.
You better believe it. And ADOS comes with an easy-to-use configuration program. You just run it, enable the things you want, ignore what you don't want.
That sounds great.
You can run ADOS from disk, or you can have ADOS create a ROM image, and you can just burn that onto a ROM and put it on your disk controller, so it boots up right into ADOS every time you boot your Coco. Imagine, you never have to set your baud rate again.
Wow, that's amazing. Will it work with my Coco 1?
ADOS works with both Coco 1 and Coco 2 systems, and it's available for just $27.95. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it.
Supercharge your color computer with ADOS from Spectro Systems. Spectro Systems, Miami, Florida.
Good morning, Unit 62134D67.
Good morning, 5B6.
It is a Saturday. What are your plans for the day?
I thought I would first enjoy an energy recharge, then review the newest semiconductor catalog.
You can't be serious.
I am only joking. We will do what we do every day.
Kill all humanoids.
Kill all humanoids.
Get that humanoid.
He must not escape.
Android attack from Spectral Associates. You're trapped in a maze surrounded by mechanical enemies. Can you find your way out before the androids eliminate you?
Get the humanoid.
Kill all humanoids.
32K required.
Welcome back to Neil's Corner on episode 85 of the Coco Crew podcast. Well, once again this month, I have another brand new game for review. Amazing for a retro computer, there definitely doesn't seem to be a shortage of new games coming out for it. This, of course, is a great problem to have. I will never complain about that. I remember getting back into the Coco in 2005, there definitely wasn't this much software being written for it, and even support in general. The game in question this month is called Ghost Rush, and it's coded by Paul Shoemaker. Yes, that's the same guy who recently brought us a plethora of fantastic card games. This game, I believe, is his first attempt at creating a fast-paced arcade-style game. Ghost Rush is simple to pick up and play, but it keeps you wanting to do better. In the game, you control a Pac-Man ghost in a circle track. You can either travel right or left in the circle while collecting random fruit dots that appear. The trick is, you can't stop moving, and to change your direction, you use the joystick button. This is the only control you have. There are multiple stages in the game, which you can tell by the graphic in the center of the circle track. Your opponents come from either side of the circle, so you have to base your direction by what side they appear. The one opponent looks to me like a microchip, but I'm not entirely sure it's supposed to be. Either way, it's very cool looking. So the game sounds easy, right? Well, give it a try for yourself. I can tell you one thing. This game is super addicting. It just captivates you to try and do better. Now onto the details. Paul has once again, like his card games, created a few different versions for us Coco users. The first version he created and released on June 9th, 2022, is for the Coco 1 and 2. And it uses P-Mode 1 graphics, and I must say, looks absolutely incredible. Paul really took advantage of the P-Mode 1 graphics, and the game just pops. A few weeks later, on June 19th, 2022, Paul released version 2 for the Coco 3, which takes advantage of the 16-color graphic mode. There's also, on a side note, an MC-10 version that was just recently released by Simon Jonasson. So if you're listening to this podcast and you have an MC-10, you have a new game to try for it as well. Both versions also have glorious multi-voice music in between the stages as you advance. Ghost Rush also saves your high score during your current gameplay sessions. The Coco 3 version also has different color options you can choose from. One last thing to note, Ghost Rush is based on an online game called Pack Rush. Paul made us a Coco port of it. While you can play the online mobile version, I suggest you put down your phone or tablet and play this Coco version. Once again, another fine brand new game for you to enjoy on your Coco. Excellent work, Paul. Thank you for creating this game. I know this will definitely be one of my favorite new go-to games. Well, until next month, happy Coco gaming and Coco forever.
Speed Racer from Mistra. Speed Racer is a supercar race game that puts you behind the wheel with incredible school 3D graphics. It's simply the finest car race game ever written for the Coco. Just $34.95, Discord tape, 32K required. From Mistron.
Well, it's that time again. We have reached the end of episode 85 on the Coco Crew Podcast. As usual, I'd like to thank our host, John Linville, for procuring all the news articles and bringing us informative tech segments. Mike Rowan for painstakingly editing the podcast and creating new commercials. Boise Pete, our Coco historian. He remembers it, so you don't have to. Last but not least, all of you who support and listen to us each month. We also really like getting your feedback. Until next month, happy Cocoing and retro forever.
It's a blast from the past.
Please listen carefully.
Coco!
Like there's no tomorrow.
What is this crazy rock and roll music anyway?
It's a blast from the past.